Welcome to the Books of Titans podcast, where I seek truth in the world's great books. I'm your host, Eric Rostad, coming to you from the beautiful Books of Titans studio in Franklin, Tennessee. My goal is to read 200 of the great books over the next 10 years and share what I'm learning. I'll talk a bit about each book, tie ideas together from a variety of genres, and share the one thing I always hope to remember from each of the great books. Today I'm going to talk about the cataclysmic will of Zeus by using five main sources. The first of those sources is the Greek epic Fragments. This is book 8 for my 2024 reading list. Second is an article titled The Epic Cycle and the Uniqueness of Homer by Jasper Griffin. Third is The Iliad by Homer. And fourth is related to that, and it's an introduction done by Bernard Knox. And that's an introduction to the Robert Fagel's translation of The Iliad. And then number five is an essay called The Serpent and the Eagle by Robert Fagles, and that is found at the beginning. That's the introduction to the Oresteia by Aeschylus, and that is the fifth item that I'll be referring to in this episode. So let me just set up quickly by talking about the Greek epic Fragments. So earlier this year, I read through the Iliad for a second time, and I read a companion guide along with the Robert Fitzgerald translation of the epic. And that companion guide would refer to stories found in a work called the Cypria and other epics. And I started seeing that these were the stories that I actually thought were in the Iliad before I ever read it. So I read it for the first time last year, and I was thinking, what's going on here? We're starting way into the Trojan War. Helen's already been kidnapped or has gone willingly with Paris. I thought I was going to read about that. I thought I was going to read about Achilles getting killed. I thought I was going to read about the Trojan horse and the fall of Troy. And none of those things are in the Iliad. And that came as quite a surprise to me. So I read the Odyssey, and they're not in there either. They're referenced, but they're not in those two works. So where are they? Well, they're here. They're in these Greek epic Fragments. And so I didn't know anything about the Cypria and these other stories. And so I looked them up, and I discovered that you could get them, and they were discussed in one of the Loeb Green books called Greek Epic Fragments. So I purchased that one, and I snuck it into my reading list here. And I was shocked to learn that the Iliad and the Odyssey are actually part of an 8-work epic cycle, conveniently called the Trojan Epic Cycle. And they fill in a lot of the gaps in the story. So let me just quickly go through these eight works that make up the Trojan Epic Cycle. So the first is called the Cypria. And this has events that were prior to the Iliad. These are events such as the judgment of Paris, the kidnapping of Helen, the gathering of the Greek troops for battle, and then attacking the town surrounding Troy after the Greeks make their way towards Troy. The second work in this cycle is the Iliad. The third is the Athiopis, which recounts the death of Achilles. The fourth is the Little Iliad, which recounts the story of the Trojan horse. The fifth is the Sack of Troy, which, as the name would suggest, covers the destruction of Troy. The sixth work is called the Returns, and that is the return of the return home of the Greeks. And then number seven, kind of aligned with that, is the Odyssey, and that's the story of Odysseus's return home. And then the eighth book, the final book of this epic cycle, is the Telogony, which recounts the further travels of Odysseus, because at the end of the Odyssey, we're just left. Odysseus knows he knows he's got to go somewhere else, and so that's what this final one covers, is those final travels, and then the killing of Odysseus by his son Telogonus, hence the name Telogony for that final work. So I have good news and I have bad news about this epic cycle, and so I'll start with the bad news. The bad news is that six of these works are lost to us. We don't have them. We obviously have the Iliad and the Odyssey, but all six of the other works are lost. We do not have them. The good news is that there are many authors referred to these works, including Aeschylus, Pindar, Euripides, and Herodotus, amongst many others. And so we have roughly 120 lines quoted from the original. But wait, there's even better news. And that is that there was a writer named Proclus who wrote plot summaries of each of the six lost works and included them in his work called Christomathy. And so that's what's in this Green Loeb Classical Library book, Greek Epic Fragments. You've got each section starts off with these summaries by Proclus, and then you have the references and the fragments in these other works. And so it's a really neat setup, and I highly recommend it just to learn these other stories, to read these references, but then also to see what other authors have referenced these works that are lost to us now. The Greek Epic Fragments book also contains the Theban epic cycle, and that contains four works, which are also lost to us. It contains poems on Heracles and Theseus, and then genealogical and antiquarian epics. So if any of those things sound exciting to you, you should get this book. So I'm now going to do something that I typically reserve for the end of my episodes, and that's that I'm going to cover the one thing, my one key takeaway from Greek Epic Fragments. And this one is a biggie. This is one of those, oh, wow, moments. I'm going to go ahead and just read what I encountered here in the Greek Epic Fragments. So before I do that, let me just set it up. At the very beginning of the Iliad, we hear about the anger or the wrath of Achilles, and we also hear about the will or the plan of Zeus being fulfilled. And I will get into this more in the next segment, but suffice to say for the moment, I was deeply interested in the idea of the will of Zeus. So let's jump back into the Cypria here, and this comes from the very first fragment that is referenced after that summary. And so this is a reference to the Cypria by another author. It's not part of Proclus's summary. And the referenced author is Scholiast, and he's writing about the Iliad, and he's writing in particular about, and Zeus's plan was being fulfilled. And so the first part I'm going to read here is the commentary on the Cypria, but from this author. And then the second part is what he actually quotes directly from the Cypria. So first part here is this author, Scholiast, talking about it. And he says this: "Others have said that Homer was referring to a myth. For they say that earth, being weighed down by the multitude of people, there being no piety among humankind, asked Zeus to be relieved of the burden. Zeus firstly and at once brought about the Theban War, by means which he destroyed very large numbers, and afterwards the Trojan one, with Cavil as his advisor, this being what Homer calls the plan of Zeus. Seeing that he was capable of destroying everyone with thunderbolts or floods, Cavil prevented this and proposed two ideas to him, the marriage of Thetis and a mortal and the birth of a beautiful daughter. The marriage of Thetis to a mortal and then the birth of a beautiful daughter. From these two events, war came about between Greeks and barbarians, resulting in the lightning of the earth as many were killed. The story is found in Stasinus, the author of the Cypria, who says..." And then I'm going to read the part next that is the quote directly from the Cypria. But before I do that, let me just go back into that part. So the Zeus is hearing about Earth being weighed down by the multitude of people and that there's no piety among them. And Zeus wants to help out Earth and relieve Earth of this burden of all this weight of all these people. And so the first thing he does is he creates the situation for the Theban War, and then a lot of people die in that. And then he creates the atmosphere for the Trojan War. But and the way he does that is at this marriage of Thetis to a mortal, and the mortal is Peleus, and then Thetis and Peleus, their child is Achilles, and then the birth of a beautiful daughter, that would be Helen. So Achilles and Helen are between the two of them. They're going to bring about this this Trojan War. And that's what we read about in the Iliad. And so that is tied to the will of Zeus being to wipe a bunch of people out. And instead of doing it with lightning bolts or a flood, he's going to do it through war. So that's pretty startling, but let me continue here with what is referenced from the Cypria itself. There was a time when the countless races of men roaming constantly over the land were weighing down the deep-breasted earth's expanse. Zeus took pity when he saw it, and in his complex mind, he resolved to relieve the all-nurturing earth of mankind's weight by fanning the great conflict of the Trojan War, to void the burden through death. So the warriors at Troy kept being killed, and Zeus's plan was being fulfilled. End quote. I wrote in the margin next to that, I wrote, whoa, in the book. And I'm still kind of in a bit of shock about that. I'll describe why why that was so interesting to me in this next segment. And then I will also pull in what I learned from the article titled The Epic Cycle and the Uniqueness of Homer in the final segment. Oh, the will of Zeus. Well, I read the Iliad for the first time in September of last year, and I read it as part of a Catherine Project group. And if you're unfamiliar with the Catherine Project, you have to check it out. You can join these free online reading groups that cover these major classical works of literature. And so this one I did was a tutorial, which is even better. There are only three students and the professor, and we were going through the Iliad and the Odyssey. And so for each time we met, we would go through four books, and we were required to write a paper before each of the courses. And so what I did with those papers is to focus on two items that show up right away in the first page of the Iliad. And those are the wrath or anger of Achilles, and then the will or plan of Zeus. And so I was just curious to see how those interacted. I wanted to see what the stronger of those two was in the Trojan War. Was the wrath of Achilles, or was the will of Zeus going to have the stronger pull in the epic? A second item that intrigued me was just kind of basic questions around this will of Zeus. Was Zeus this puppet master that pulled the strings of human beings to get them to do whatever was his will, to fulfill his will? Or was he an influencer in the sense of using persuasion to get people to do his will? Or does he use choices by humans? So the choice of Achilles not to fight as part of that wrath, does he use that choice to weave together his will? So kind of just taking every soldier's choices and every leader and everybody, all their choices together, and just kind of in real time weaving them together. Is that what the will of Zeus means? Or another way to look at it, is this premeditated? Is there some will of Zeus out there that is already set, or is it being formed in real time? I hear about the will of God all the time, and people kind of questioning, like, am I doing the will of God in my life? And so I was very curious to look at the Greek conception of the will of the deity, and in this earliest of works, what does it tell us about what they thought of the will of Zeus, the will of their deity? Then as I got into the story, the will of Zeus became quite confusing. So he's the top god, but he's always fighting the other gods. And there are jealousies, backstabbings, seductions. So what are we to make of this? Is this will a good one? Is the will of Zeus good? There seems to be very little care for people on the whole. So what is the overall purpose or the will of Zeus? What is the end? To what end is the will of Zeus? And the text does not tell us. There's no place in the Iliad, especially not in that first paragraph there, where it says, so the will of Zeus was being fulfilled, so that. There's no so that in something after that. It's just the will of Zeus is being fulfilled. And to contemplate the things further, there are some things that Zeus cannot bypass. It's as if there's like a fate directing things even above the will of Zeus. And in the Iliad, Zeus never explains his will. So we don't get an explanation of what it is. And so all these things they become very fascinating just to consider them within the Iliad itself, but then to expand and look and to look into other references. So when I read the Odyssey, I was looking for this as well. Now that I'm reading other Greek literature, I'm looking for this thing. Do they say anything about the will of Zeus? What's the conception of people at this time or that's in these works? So now let's go back to what I read in segment one, keeping in mind that this work comes in the first work of the epic cycle, so before the Iliad. And for the sake of argument here, let's say that what comes before the Iliad, or let's say that the people of this time, including Homer, they would have been aware of the stories that were in the Cypria. And in fact, in the Iliad, we find a bunch of references to other items in the Cypria. So it's very likely that Homer knew of the will of Zeus being to wipe out humanity, as found in the Cypria there. So the Cypria does give this actual will of Zeus. It gives an end. It gives a purpose of the will of Zeus, and that purpose is to wipe out humanity. It's a purpose I covered in last week's episode about the Atra Hasis. In that work, the god Elil, and that again is the Babylonian flood deluge story. In that work, the god Elil seeks to wipe out humankind. They're making too much noise. And so now we're getting into flood deluge territory if this, in fact, is the will of Zeus to wipe out mankind. And the reason given in this case is that humankind weighed too much and that they were evil. And then Earth is personified in this story. And so humankind is too heavy for Earth. And with Atrahasis, humankind was too noisy. In Genesis, humankind is too evil. And so I got to admit, reading this was actually a bit of a letdown because it kind of stripped away all of that mystery about the will of Zeus. It is interesting in that sense that it ties to other cataclysmic events like Atrahasis and then the Noah flood story and other deluge stories. But it was also disappointing. It did provide some food for thought, though. And for that, I appreciated it. Last week in the episode, I highlighted Stephanie Daly's work in the University of Oxford Press's Myths from Mesopotamia, where she ties together the names of survivors of the flood, making the leap from Atrahasis all the way to Odysseus, that there were connection points between the two and other survivors. And I'll link to that episode in the show notes. But if that's the case, Odysseus does become a survivor of the cataclysmic event. He's the Noah, the Atrahasis, the Utnapishtim. So I don't necessarily like this will of Zeus being an actual thing. It kind of disrupts the thread in you know, watching that throughout the entire Iliad. But it is also kind of fun to look at it and consider it in that sense of perhaps Zeus did have a will to wipe out humanity, and then how that connects to these other deluge and cataclysmic event stories. And so just basic reactions here. This certainly changes the reading of the Iliad in a way that I don't particularly like. I like questioning that will of Zeus throughout the epic rather than knowing what it actually was. It's also, quite frankly, a horrifying thought. A cataclysmic flood is bad enough, but the wiping out of large swaths of people because they are too heavy on the earth is quite sinister. And to think of all the glory, pain, grief, striving, and struggle, to think that none of that mattered, it's almost too depressing to consider. So that's why I titled this episode The Cataclysmic Will of Zeus. In Emily Wilson's translation of the Iliad, she spoke of the cataclysmic wrath of Achilles, and that's how she translates the anger or the wrath of Achilles. She calls it the cataclysmic wrath of Achilles. And I really liked that. I thought it captured, anger to me doesn't capture what that wrath ended up doing. It ended up being the death of many people, many Greeks, many people that were on Achilles' side. And it said about this, the best word, cataclysmic series of events. And so in this reference in the Cypria, it would shift the entire story to be more, instead of the cataclysmic wrath of Achilles, it would be more the cataclysmic will of Zeus. Well, I posted that I had discovered this Cypria on Twitter, and that I was reading the Greek epic fragments. And someone by the name of, or the handle of, Ye Old Philologer Cocodrill replied to one of my one of those tweets, and he said, I need to read he recommended I read The Epic Cycle and the Uniqueness of Homer by Jasper Griffin. And he says this about it. He said, nobody should dip into cyclical fragments without at least reading Jasper Griffin's article on what he makes of Homer's difference. So I purchased it on JSTOR. It was $12, this article, and then I read it, and then here are some of the main points. What Jasper Griffin is doing in this article is contrasting the Iliad with the other works of this epic cycle. And what you see in this epic cycle is a lot of fantastical stories, like supernatural things and monsters and beasts and that kind of thing. And he contrasts that to the Iliad, where those things are not really a part of the Iliad. Yes, you have the gods, and you see the gods interfering, you see the gods influencing, you see the gods persuading. But I mean, just take a basic contrast between the Iliad and the Odyssey. The Odyssey contains much more of the fantastic. While Odysseus is going home, there's Circe, there's monsters, there's all sorts of things that you do not see in the Iliad. And so Jasper Griffin makes the point that the Iliad was exceptional in this respect. And so he gives an example where he says this: the natural inference is that the poet of the Iliad is familiar with the story, but has suppressed it, and gives a number of examples. But his point is that Homer would have been aware of the stories that we see in the Cypria, but he doesn't get into a lot of them. And there's some biggies. There's some big stories that would help us understand what is happening in the Iliad. And the audience at that time would have known these, but we don't. But there's also just, he doesn't mention them at all, where he does mention a number of other stories in the Cypria. So it's just interesting to consider. So let me read three different parts of this essay. And the first part, it starts like this: highly characteristic of the cycle was the great number of oracles and prophecies it contained. Will Cullman lists 17 recorded in our sources and rightly infers that such a number must have given the cycle a strongly deterministic character. Perhaps in accordance with this was the development in the Cypria of the Iliadic idea of the will of Zeus. The prologue to the Iliad uses this phrase in such a way as to apply both to the events of the poem as a whole, and also in particular, if pressed, to the plan which Zeus devises with Thetis. Esthasius well observes that in the prologue, Homer glorifies his own poem by promising that it will contain, and then he quotes the Greek intro, or the very first part of the Iliad, all in Greek. So I'll skip that. And then he says, he adds a crowning piece of glorification by adding, and the will of Zeus was fulfilled, suggesting that the anger of Achilles could not have done all this without some divine will. But the cyclic poet felt the need to spell out fully the effect of Homeric hint. And so the story was told of Zeus planning to reduce the overpopulation of the world by means of the Trojan War. The idea is of a distressing thinness and flatness, dissolving the Iliad's imposing opaqueness to an all too perspicuous rationality. The whole story is thus made predetermined, and a sort of unity is imposed upon it of a rather superficial sort. End quote. I loved that. I felt the same. Just that what he says here, that it reduced the work, or the idea is a distressing thinness and flatness, and it dissolves the Iliad's imposing opaqueness to an all too perspicuous rationality. The whole story is thus made predetermined. Let me close out here with the end of this essay. And here, this comes on page 52 of the essay. My purpose in this inquiry, so this is Jasper Griffin speaking, my purpose in this inquiry has not been the arid one of disparaging lost poems, but rather to use them to illuminate the great epics we have. The tendency of much recent work on Homer has been to suggest that all epics have much the same qualities, and even that of a well-organized formulaic technique, a poem like the Iliad was more or less bound to appear. Sometimes it seems like its appearance is envisaged as almost spontaneous. The cyclic epics show how remote this is from the truth. End quote. And I think that's so important. He just keeps calling out that the Iliad is something different than the rest of the epics. And so he's trying to distance from that initial statement of the will of Zeus being tied to this cataclysmic wrath, this cataclysmic event of wiping out humanity. And let me close here. This is the last part of this article. Homeric epics, especially the Iliad, the strict, radical, and consistently heroic interpretation of the world presented by the Iliad made it quite different from the cycle, still content with monsters, miracles, metamorphoses, and an untragic attitude towards mortality, all seasoned with exoticism and romance, and composed in a flatter, looser, less dramatic style. The contrast helps to bring out the greatness and the uniqueness of that achievement. End quote. Now let me move on to the Bernard Knox intro to the Robert Fagel's translation of the Iliad. And it's important to note that in a section that's called The Gods, Bernard Knox does not refer to the Cypria at all, or to the possibility of the will of Zeus being related to a mass extermination. Instead, he compares the will of Zeus to fate. And so here are three different quotes from Bernard Knox from that introduction. Events are determined. We are expressly told at the beginning of the poem and elsewhere by the will of Zeus, who is presented to us in the poem as a figure more stable, more majestic than the other gods. And yet, on more than one occasion, the will of Zeus is thwarted by fate, as in the case of Sarpedon, his beloved son. As he sees him closing in combat with Patroclus, Zeus laments, "Sarpedon, the man I love the most, my own son, doomed to die at the hands of Menenitus' son, Patroclus." That's the first quote. The second one, the idea of destiny, of what is fixed, is flexible. Zeus can predict the future. The deaths of Patroclus, of Achilles, the fall of Troy, and in all these cases, it is impossible to say whether the result is destiny or his will or both. But sometimes the possibility is raised that what is fated will actually be annulled by divine will or even by human, end quote. And then the third quote from this Bernard Knox intro, the other gods do not argue with Zeus, though they may try to trick him as Hera does successfully, and he does not explain his will to them, he threatens and enforces, end quote. So Jasper Griffin makes the argument that although being part of the Trojan epic cycle, the Iliad is a different beast. It doesn't play by the rules of the epic cycle, and it maintains a non-fantastical mood. And although the Iliad references a number of other stories from the Cypria, and the assumption can be that Homer knew of it, he does not refer to that story of the will of Zeus, of it being an attempt to wipe out humanity. So maybe Homer didn't even believe in a cataclysmic wrath of Zeus, a cataclysmic will of Zeus. Maybe he was more interested in contemplating the realms of the gods with the ultimate costs at play, death in war. And looking at Bernard Knox, he doesn't even refer to it. He does not refer to the Cypria. He considers the interplay between fate and the will of Zeus to be more important than some sort of a predetermined cataclysmic will of Zeus. So keep this idea in your quiver. It's a potential explanation for the will of Zeus, but as Jasper Griffin mentions, it flattens the Iliad by making the entire thing predetermined, and it doesn't allow you to ask those important questions throughout the epic that I mentioned above about the will of Zeus. Let me reference one last piece here, and this is the unbelievable essay called The Serpent and the Eagle by Robert Fagles, which is at the beginning of Aeschylus's Oresteia. And this is the book I'm reading right now. And I just, it's almost a 100-page essay, which is the intro to this work. And it is something, it's one of the best introductions I've ever read for a book. And so I get it. It's the Penguin Classics version of of this tragedy, but it's amazing. But Robert Fagles in this essay, he identifies a shift that occurs in the conception of the idea of the will of Zeus. And this comes on page 89 of the introduction. So I'm going to read this paragraph. Surely the gods of Aeschylus are superhuman powers, yet the Oresteia is such a humanistic statement, one may often wonder if the gods could exist without us. They endure our tragic choices, they build upon our strengths. The will of Zeus becomes the will to human justice. Necessity becomes the force of life. Character is destiny, after all, not in the ruinous spirit of Agamemnon at the start, but in the spirit of Athena, who creates our destination. Democracy, a human institution. The Oresteia is a theodicy, but as Nietzsche observed, the gods justified human life by living it themselves, the only satisfactory theodicy. The gods become our powers, our energies, and our ideals, and they are wedded by Athena, our compassion that alone can breed our culture. And I'll stop reading it there. But even there, you start getting the idea that the will of Zeus is tying more to human justice. And in the Oresteia, you see this this shift to a democracy. You see this shift to justice and law on Earth, and it being done in a legal system in courts, as opposed to perhaps directly from the gods. And so just, I'm reading the great books in order. So it's my understanding that Homer kind of kicks off some of these will of Zeus, will of the deity questions, and then that they are later taken up as I just read in the Oresteia, but then they're also taken up by Plato and others. And that, you know, we're still thinking about these questions. We're still thinking about the will of the deity, the will of God. Is it something that is preordained? Is it something that we play a part in? Is it something that we can influence, or are we puppet? Are we directed by a puppet master? These are consistent questions throughout time, and this may be one of the first written sources that we have of digging into the idea in the form of a story that really makes you consider and contemplate the different sides of it. You can't come away reading the Iliad with this idea that, well, the will of Zeus is just that he wipes out humanity, and that's what he wants to do. So that's what he's going to do through this Trojan War. You don't see that idea in the Iliad, and I don't like thinking of it in that way, because it does kind of kill the questioning that happens in the Iliad. So perhaps that is the will of Zeus. Perhaps that's what Homer was referencing, but perhaps it's not. And if it's not, I think it opens up a lot greater reading and joy in reading the Iliad. So to recap, the Greek epic fragments are an important addition to your library. They provide a lot of the before, in between, and after stories of the Iliad and the Odyssey. It's just neat to think of this as this huge mythology that is referenced from that point forward. And on a smaller level, the first work, the Cypria, contains another consideration of the understanding of the will of Zeus. And how interesting is it, just, you know, kind of taking a step back here, that one of the lost works provides an explanation. It's almost like we weren't supposed to have it. What if the grappling with that question of the will of Zeus is more important than having the predetermined answer already for us? I had never once seen this idea referenced until I came across it in these fragments, the idea that the will of Zeus was actually this desire to wipe out mankind. It doesn't appear to be something well known or of worth to be considered. But say it is true, it would connect the will of Zeus to other cataclysmic events and other deluge and flood stories, and it would potentially open up this reading of the story of Odysseus as a survivor of this deluge of war from Zeus. I want to just cover one thing at the very end here, and that is kind of a delightful story that this work was given, the Cypria was given as a dowry. And so here is what it says in the Greek epic fragrance. The title means the Cyprian epic and implies that it came from Cyprus. It was usually ascribed to a Cypriot poet, Stasinus or Hegesias. There was a story apparently already known to Pindar that Homer composed it but gave it to Stasinus as his daughter's dowry. Nothing is known of this man or indeed of the other poet named in connection with the cycle. And then I'll end the quote there. But that is such a, I love that story, that perhaps Homer even wrote the Cypria, but then gave it as a dowry for his daughter's wedding. It's just kind of a delightful story to read. I want to close out this episode reading one other piece from the Cypria that I thought was just beautiful. And here we go. And she with her attendants, smile-loving Aphrodite, they wore fragrant garlands, the flowers of the earth, and put them on their heads, those goddesses with glossy veils, the nymphs and graces, and golden Aphrodite with them, as they sang beautifully on Mount Ida of the many springs. Well, the next episodes I have coming up are to cover Pindar, the Odes, then Aesop's Fables, and then I will get into the Orestia. And I'm looking forward to that one. I'm reading it through three different times, and then I read that introduction by Robert Fagles as well. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. Thank you for listening. I would love to hear from you if this is a topic of interest for you. I would love to hear from you if you know more about this Will of Zeus, if you know more about the Cypria, if you know of other sources I should read to learn more about this idea and to see if it ever took root, if people ever read it, the Iliad, in that light of the Trojan War just being an excuse to kill a bunch of people. You can follow Books of Titans on Instagram or Twitter, and I have a website that is stocked full of resources to help you find the best books and to create your own reading list. I also have my Great Books reading list there, and I'd love for your comments on that if you see that I'm missing a book that I should add to the list. So I'll be back next week to discuss Pindar. And until then, keep reading, keep learning, and keep listening. I'm out.